Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I'm going to put you back in your corner. Welcome to CEOs and Soul Talk with Nick Kober Esquire. CEOs and Soul Talk is a unique, spiritually based conversation that discusses what happens after the boardroom doors close and the front door of your home opens. After you experience the tragedy, we will guide you to the triumph. We will provide you with the tools needed to turn struggles into successes so that you can actualize your divine purpose in your personal and professional life. And now, here's our host, Nick Kober Esquire.
Good evening, everyone. I am delirious. I'm deliriously happy right now. I can't believe that we have actually come this far, and I feel like everyone here has been on this journey with me. I appreciate every listener that we have, and I want to just give you a little bit of background about myself. Again, my name is Nicole Kober. My friends call me Nick. I consider you a friend. And just by way of background, I am an attorney as well as a small business mentor and coach. I got my start almost 14 years ago, and I opened a day spa and hair salon in Washington, D.C. called Soul Day Spa, and I went through some ups and downs and all arounds, and I kind of lived to tell the story. When I stopped, I had to close my business a few years ago. And it really gave me an opportunity to reflect on what it is that I really, really wanted out of my life. And it caused me to look a little deeper. And I appreciate it. And looking back, I appreciated that. And it actually was the catalyst for me writing a book, which is called CEO of My Soul. And I think the book has been out since May. It's been doing an amazing job. In fact, today I literally just left the CVS and picked up my copy of this month's edition of Essence magazine. And Essence has said that the book is one of its top reads for the month. So I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed that I took that leap of faith and told my story. And so what CEOs and Soul Talk wants to accomplish is to have those deeper level of conversations with you all. You know, I think a lot of people see one side of professional people, you know, especially people in the media, right? Journalists, things, they see them looking very polished, got the best hair, got the best clothes, but we never know what goes on after the cameras go off, or if you see a very professional or successful owner of a business, or you know, someone that is really acclaimed. We only get a glimpse of who they really are by what they show us. What I'd like to do is go a little deeper and have those kinds of conversations about when things were not as good and what the cameras and people don't see, because I think there's so much value in those stories and those valleys, if you will. So CEOs and Soul Talks wants to do that. I don't want to just tell you how to put a business plan together, right? I don't want to just tell you how to get your financing together. Oh, there's definitely room for that. I'll bring people on and I'll give you my experiences too. But don't you really want to have a real conversation? It's 7 o'clock at night. You know, you've just had a long day at work. Let your hair down, get your glass of wine, and have some real talk. That's what I want to accomplish. So today, I am so excited that the first guest that I have is Ms. Kelly Lynn. She is an Emmy Award-winning journalist locally in the DC metro area, has been in the game for a very long time, is an amazing, not only an amazingly accomplished person, but a wonderful woman, mother of two children, a wife, and I just thought she embodies exactly what kinds of conversations I want to have. She's a very dear friend. I've known her for almost 20 years, actually more than 20 years. And I thought that if we could come on and just have a conversation and kind of get real with each other, I think that the audience would really truly benefit from that. So what I wanted to first start off with before we get to Kelly in a few minutes, we're just kind of open up and talk about, you know, what's going on in the world, what are the latest headlines and everything. Now, I know that anybody that's listening to me right now, you guys are probably gearing up, getting your little watch party together, because we know that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are about to do their thing, the rumble in the jungle. Going to see. Now, I will, that's the thing. I'm going to give it to you all straight. I cannot believe that we are where we are in the country, where Donald Trump, a reality TV star, is a contender, is within a heartbeat of the presidency. That troubles me deeply. Something is defective. Something is wrong. And I get, you know, that people are angry and they want change. But I will tell you, you know, this is not the the ordinary election as far as I'm concerned, as far as many people are concerned. I hear the topic false equivalence. I hear the issue false equivalence. And that's exactly what's going on here. You have two people that people like or dislike for different reasons, but you cannot compare them as being equal. Okay, so you have one person who has a remarkable track record, a proven track record within the government, has experience, and has lived her whole public life within service to not only her local community, but nationally. And then you have a person that has done nothing, has basically nothing on his resume, even remotely related to public service. And not only that, so if you just don't even look at the resumes, you look at the fact that, I mean, he really has spewed hate and clearly does not want to represent everyone in the country, but uses that hate as getting headlines. And I think that is a really unfortunate, manipulative way to, a cynical way of getting to where he is. And so, you know, I'm very kind of disappointed with the kind of level of dialogue that we have. What I'm expecting tonight, I'm going to do what they say not to do. I'm going to hold him to a high standard. I don't think he should be able to just get up there and not offend somebody and be like, he's done a great job. No, I really hope that he gets some substantive questions, that he really is held accountable. I hope that the moderator really does not let any falsehoods, if any, should come up. I don't think that he should let him pass. I think it would be an excellent point in journalism to actually get facts and hold people accountable for what they say. I think that would be, it's just critical. And then with regard to Hillary, what does she need to do? I think she just needs to, you know, and people disagree with me, I think she needs to be herself, you know, get up there, talk about the policies, really try to stay above the fray, you know, not get into the name calling, but, you know, so show substantively who she is. But I will add this. I do think that there is a perception problem with her. She may not be warm and fuzzy, and I do understand that politics is a little bit of it is substance and it is style. I mean, you know, we have a great example with President Obama. I think he's one of the most brilliant presidents that we've had, but I also think that he knows and is relatable to people. I think Hillary looks uncomfortable sometimes, and I think she needs to relax. I think she just needs to relax. She has this, and be approachable. Be somebody that, you know, we want to root for. So I hope that that comes through, and I hope that they get some great questions today, and I hope she just stays focused. In case you didn't know who I was voting for, I think now you do. So that's one of the topics I wanted to talk about. Another amazing topic that I wanted to share with you guys is I had the amazing honor of being able to go to the African American History and Cultural Museum this weekend. I went on the first day, me and my hubby-to-be, Harold, and partner. And I had so many emotions. Let me just say, the way that it's arranged is breathtaking. First, I was just struck by the sheer enormity of it, its depth, its breadth. Then I was really dazzled by just the materials. I mean, it was as if someone just took such great care with every piece of material, every artifact, every brick, every piece of stone in there, the tremendous amount of detail and care. It was humbling to experience that. I have been fighting to figure out the words, but it was just a beautifully crafted building. But substantively, you know, you start in the basement. And the basement level has to deal with, you know, how slavery began, pre-slavery, and it took you through there. And then when slavery began, and then the Reconstruction era, and Jim Crow, civil rights. And that's as far as I got. The other levels had to do with more modern day and different cultural accomplishments, professional sports accomplishments, et cetera. But I will tell you what I felt being down in the basement and seeing the struggles that came before us, tremendous sense of pride. And I also felt a tremendous sense of the pieces that may have been missing in our education growing up, in our children's education, currently in the school system. All those missing pieces to that puzzle were housed in that museum. And just by way of background, too, I am the new president elect for my son's, my fourth graders, elementary school. And I'll tell you, this is a school in Falls Church. And since I've been there, I have not seen them acknowledge or pay any kind of homage to Black History Month. And so I took the position with the goal of making them a bit more sensitive to integrating different cultures and historic references to people of color into the curriculum. I think the museum totally helped me on that and totally helped me. It just empowered me, other parents, other educators, to tell a very beautifully crafted, contextual, holistic story about the African American experience, which is the American experience. And so I think everyone that's listening should run, jump, skip, ride, get on that train and get to that museum. Take your children, take your grandmama, take your cousin Ray Ray. Everybody needs to walk through there and experience it, but most especially our educators. So those are the couple things I just want to tell you all about, give you my little two cents worth. So now, without further delay, I want to bring on my lovely, beautiful sister, friend, family, mentor, role model, Miss Kelly Lynn. Kelly is just one of the most beautiful people inside and out that I have ever met. And I will give you guys, hopefully Kelly doesn't mind, but I'll give our audience a little context. So I do know her as a family member. My oldest son, she is my oldest son's aunt. And she's known me since I was a very young woman in the D.C. area. I met her, I think, when I just graduated from Howard's Law School. And when I met her brother and I met her family, and just some of the most gracious, sweet people that I've met since I've been here. And at the time, Kelly was an anchor in Baltimore. The same studio that Miss Oprah Winfrey was at many years ago, and she made a name for herself in her own right. And Kelly, I'll let her say exactly how long she was out there, but the really cool story is that she was very much a career woman when I met her, did not have children. That was not her focus from what I can remember at that time. She did marry her husband and then went on and had two children. And I believe we had several conversations talking about, you know, just the shift, what that paradigm shift looked like to her. And the game, doing her thing at WJLA in Arlington, Virginia, has two Emmys to speak of, and I'm sure more to come. And so with that, I would love to bring on my sister and my role model, Miss Kelly Lynn. Kelly.
Good evening. How are you?
Hi, honey. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Congratulations, Nicole, on your first show. I'm so happy for you. We had talked about your potential as a radio broadcaster, so it just warms my heart hearing you do this. And you are doing a really good job. You're handling this very well, so I'm proud of you. I didn't know what to expect. This is good. Not what I thought.
You are so funny. Girl, look, I'm just winging it.
I know. Your first time out of the gate, and you are just sounding like a true pro here. This is a good time.
Well,
it's a very good time.
Well, coming from you, you know I appreciate you so much. And, you know, I was like, if she just says yes, because I know how private you are, and I totally respect it, and you always giggle at me when I'm, you know, doing the Facebook, like, hey, I'm here, and hey, I'm there. And you're like, girl, I don't have time for this. This stuff is a struggle, trying to get the tweets and the pictures out. You're like, that is not my thing, right? But I was like, she's going to say no. But if she says no, that's cool. I'm just going to still ask her and, you know, see if she'll do it. So I'm so happy that you agreed. And I just love you so much. I really, really, on so many levels, think that you just embody the kinds of people that our audience, our growing audience, want to hear from, and to, because you're a woman of great depth, you're a woman of great spirituality, you're a woman of, you know, that is at the epitome of professionalism in your field. You have two great kids, a successful marriage, and sometimes people look at those things, they take that snapshot. And some may be like, how does she do it? You know, everything looks perfect. And then some may be like, oh, you know, how can I learn? And so that was the reason I really wanted you to come on, is just see if you would be willing to share just some stories of inspiration, maybe some stories of hardships, some personal hardships that you have experienced, and then what are things that kind of brought you out of that. And, you know, if you're willing to share, I would love to have those conversations with you.
Oh my goodness, I don't even know where to start. I mean, I remember.
Well, where
I remember,
are you from? Tell our audience where you're from, Kelly.
Okay, well, I am from the D.C. area. I grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland. Maybe I should turn my volume down so I'm hearing myself. Okay. But I grew up in Silver Spring and always dreamed of being a broadcaster and went to Howard University, went down the Meridian, Mississippi, came back up to News Channel 8, and then went to Baltimore for many years. And that's where I got married, started my family. And life has been very good. And when it got interesting when I decided to take that leap of faith and leave my career that I loved so much and be home with the children. So it was sort of the mixed blessing. I mean, it was a very fearful decision, but my heart really wanted it, and so I took the leap of faith, and it all worked out in the end. But I think that was probably the biggest decision of my life, and one that I don't really regret now because it came full circle and everything worked out beautifully. So here I am.
Well, let me ask you this, because I want to take you back. You said I always knew I wanted to be a journalist, right? And what I talked about in CEO of My Soul was really trying to, find your life's purpose and how those seeds are planted pretty early on if we're paying attention. But things like fear or, how am I going to get a job, these types of things may cover those up. What specific instance showed you that you wanted to be a journalist? And then did you have support from your family members to say, hey, go for that? Some people, are discouraged from factors. When did you know, and how were you able to actively pursue it at such a young age?
I knew probably when I was around 9 or 10, and all I did was sort of put things together. I knew that I could write well, and I was always the kid who was reading to the class, so I knew I spoke well, and I enjoyed writing, and I always succeeded in those areas, so it just made sense for me to go into that profession. And, I remember just watching the news and wondering, okay, how could a kid like me do that now? And there was a show on the air called Kids World. And I remember writing a letter and doing a tape recording, interviewing my mother, who's an artist, and I was asking her about her painting and her career. And then I put all that together with a photograph, and I remember mailing it to the TV show. But it turned out the TV show was in Florida, so I couldn't get there to do the show. But, I mean, just at that young age, applying for this television job.
That's
so
hot.
It was just something that I felt, hey, I can do that. And I started really young. I think I was actually 12 by the time I sent that letter. But and then after that, I started looking at opportunities in D.C. on the radio and wound up working. By the time I was in high school, I was doing the school announcements. And then in my senior year, I remember I left high school on Fridays because I was interning at WHUR-FM. So even, it evolved. Like, the idea probably came around 9 or 10, and then it just slowly evolved. And, and then by the time I was in college, I was on the radio, at 19 years old. So then did a little BET, was able to host a segment on BET, and then got my first job in Mississippi. So it just was sort of one opportunity after the other, one open door, just like what you're experiencing now with your book and all the opportunities that are coming. Just, you have the vision for yourself and then doors open and that tells you, okay, this is the right thing for me. So that's the same happened
that's
for
perfect.
Me.
That's perfect. So let's fast forward a bit. You are riding high. You're doing afternoon segments in Baltimore at Oprah's station, right? So you've got to be feeling like, I am it. Like, I get it. This is what I'm born to do. I'm very focused, very driven. So when did the family, the work-life kind of decisions start to come into play? And what was the most challenging decisions that you had to make once you had a family?
Well, first of all, I want to say that WJZ-TV is a highly respected station. It is the CBS-owned and operated station. There are only a handful across the country, but it's owned by the network, operated by the network. And it was really a powerhouse station. So getting there was a special opportunity. And I remember being welcomed there like family. And they really look at their news talent. They sort of approach it almost like, okay, she's the little sister, and she's the, you know, this is the mother, and this is the father. I mean, they really sort of position everybody with that sort of family dynamic. And I grew up there. I came when I was very, like, in my early 20s, and it was just a great opportunity from beginning to end. But I would have to say about 5 years in, I felt like, okay, I've sort of mastered this job. I was doing medical reporting and anchoring the 12 o'clock news. And I knew that I needed to go. People would tell me, oh, you need to go somewhere else. You need to move to the next market. But I was so darn happy. You know, I was in my, you know, I was home. I was in Maryland where I grew up. I was not far. I was a 45-minute drive to Silver Spring. But, I mean, I was close enough to family. I was making a good salary. I enjoyed the work I was doing. It was just a great fit. And even though I wanted a little bit more of a professional challenge, I just felt, well, this is really too good to leave. Like, it's, you know, it would have to be something incredible for me to leave it. And then when I started, I knew that something was sort of missing. And then when I had my first child, it just was a beautiful distraction. I mean, it was, you know, I remember before I got pregnant, I was evaluating life. And is this all there is to life? I mean, you just get a good job, you make money, you take vacations, you go to restaurants.
Yes. No, because I remember you were very analytical with me during my pregnancy. You know, you were like interviewing me, like, how do you feel? And then after. The change, like, what would that mean? And I try to tell people that don't have kids that are like, what is it like to have kids? I don't think there's any functional example to really let you know what that life looks like until you have that kid, that love, that experience. Am I right?
You're right. And I want to say something really quick. This is a technical thing that I'm talking about now. I get a pause. This is the third time I've gotten sort of total silence while you were talking, and I just want you to know, if I don't respond, I'm still here, but I'm in the pause mode of whatever's happening. So just bear with me. Just wait for
okay,
me.
Okay.
I'm still here.
Okay.
But yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, you weren't the only one that was being interviewed. Every single person who was a mother pregnant would get interviewed by me. I mean, I was so consumed with, should I have children? Should I not have children? You know, is this something that I really want to do? And so I did my research thoroughly. And then I finally, blessed to be pregnant, and then had the child and was, you know, all freaked out thinking, how will I ever be able to juggle all this? And it was just a beautiful experience from beginning to end. And I wanted to. I think anybody who knows me knows that the way I do things, if I'm going to do something, I really want to do it well. And I think motherhood struck me that way. I thought, I want the time to soak this up. I want to enjoy this. I don't want to mess this up.
Yeah.
So my son came along, and I decided it was so great. We did it again, and we had dinner. And by then, when I had my son, I was thinking, I need more time. I want more time to enjoy him. And but I said, I want to know what it feels like to work full-time and have two children. Before I take the leap, dream job, I want to know what it's like to have two. And so when I had the daughter, it became very demanding and a little overwhelming to have a newborn and a toddler. And I went to my mm-hmm. job and I asked them, could I work part-time? I wanted the best of both. I wanted more time with the kids, more time, I mean, and but keep the job because I love the job too. So they wouldn't give me the part-time job, and then finally I left, and they were willing to negotiate, and we came up with a 3-day-a-week schedule that was perfect. And mm-hmm. you know, that lasted like 4 years, and then they didn't want to do it anymore, and then we kind of went our separate ways, and I was sort of freelancing. But you talked about how everything changes when those kids come. I think so, and I think that even, you know, that shift from being this career woman who always wanted to do this and was mm-hmm. consumed with it, and then the kids came, and then I got consumed with them. I think that was just probably a normal reaction for people who like to be really into whatever it is that they're doing. And yeah. So that's where I was. Yeah.
So tell me about, okay, you guys go your separate ways. You're freelancing, right? The kids are now, you know, I'm assuming like early elementary school, right? Did you ever have any time where you know, and you're no longer full time, you're no longer like in the legal profession, they call it partnership track, right? So you know, the young gunners, they're there 90 hours a week, billing. And then you have these other, you know, these other responsibilities. Was there ever a time where you had any kind of anxiety when you left about no longer being, you know, on that one way, you know, partnership track, so to speak?
No, because the heart wanted the time with the children more than the partnership, or more than the next big job. And I think what got me over the fence was I realized that I could get another anchor job, but I could not get the time back with the children. And I'm a person mm-hmm. who hates regrets. I don't want to ever live my life with regrets. And I thought, well, if there's a possibility that you can get another job, another dream job, then maybe take the time now, because this, once this is gone, it's gone. And so that reality allowed me to say, you know what, I'm not going to look back. But when the station decided, you know, and that part-time job, Nicole, was the best job of my life, I have to tell you.
So tell me about it, because I don't know. What did you do?
I was off every Monday and Friday. I worked Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I just did medical reports. I wasn't anchoring anymore. I was just doing the medical. And I missed the anchoring. I really did. But they let me fill in when people would go on vacation. But I'm just saying, having 4 days off a week was, all the women out there who are listening who have ever worked part-time, you know, it is just so delicious. I honestly wanted to do that for the rest of my life. I never wanted to go back full-time in broadcasting. And they had to pull the cord to get me. I never probably would have gotten JLA. I never probably would have won the Emmy. So they really sort of pulled the plug and then let me kind of get out there as a freelancer, which was another, you know, everything that happens to me, I appreciate all the steps. And I'm going to tell you, you know, it was a little bit like, I remember a guy walking me out to my car with my box of stuff at Jay-Z, and he said, so what are you going to be doing? I mean, you do have something, don't you? And I said, no.
Oh, right.
And he goes, you don't.
Right.
I mean, no one could believe that I had nothing.
Yeah.
But I thought, I put it in spiritual context, and I thought, well, you know what? If God closed the door, he's got something else for me. So I stood on my face, and within days, a wonderful job opened up at Comcast, and I was the host of Newsmakers, and I did, you know, I might have worked 2 days a week with that, and it was fabulous. And then I was off the whole month of August, so I could, my mother lives in Florida, I was able to go see her for, you know, 3 weeks at a time. So it was, you know, all of it was just beautiful. And one of the years, the first year before I got to, actually, Comcast didn't come that quick, but the first year I worked as a producer, I produced medical reports for a company down in Florida. And so, and then Comcast opened up, so it was always, it was just more opportunities. But I, you know, I remember when Comcast felt like it was coming to a close, and then out of the blue, you know, God opened up this WJLA opportunity, which sort of dropped right in my lap. And so I just, you know, I really learned to trust, and that, that those experiences really grew my faith, where I knew that I don't have to be afraid because I know.
Well, so that's perfect. You know, I'm interrupting, but I'm segueing so you can finish that, because that's truly, you know, the heart of those leaps of faith, right? Is are you rooted in anything? Are you rooted in that knowing that God, that you know you have something, you don't have to worry, that worry, you replaced your worry with faith. Was your faith always strong, or was your faith strengthened through that active process of having a little bit of a gap of security, right? So you didn't have anything, but were you already like, hey, I know God's going to work it out. You really didn't have any trepidation, or were you like, okay, I'm going to sit in this. You know, this feels a little uncomfortable, but you know, this is where active faith comes in. Which was it for you?
I think that the initial decision was the most frightening decision of my life. And I think prior to making the decision, my faith was not even close. I mean, nowhere close to where it is now. So, yes, I was scared. And I did all my research. I mean, I had a thick file of broadcasters. I printed out their stories who left the business to be home with their children. I emailed them. I'm telling you, I was so scared. I wanted to talk to anybody and everybody who could relate to this, who had done this. So it was my big research project. But I think that, yes, I think all of this, I had to reach beyond the fear, because in the Bible it says God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. And I remember thinking, okay, if you made me with power, and if you created me with love, and if you created me with a sound mind, and I've mulled this over for years, and I've done the research, and you continue to put this on my heart, then this is a sound decision. And I'm going to trust you with the results. And I remember saying to my mom, I went through worst in my mind. I have to always walk myself through worst case scenario. And I remember talking to my mother and saying, okay, well, if I lose the house, I can come live with you. But you know what? Living with you. We live together well, and we all be under one roof. And, you know, I mean, I remember.
So what did Mike say about that? Was he in? No, we left poor little Mike out. We talked about the kids. Was he on that faith walk with you, girl?
And I just said when we lose it. But it would have been my doing. That's what I said, when I lose it, because I lost it for us. But, he rolls his eyes at me and just, you know, says whatever. He doesn't pay me any mind. But I did not take this leap without going to him first and saying, I really need you to be in agreement with me. I feel like I need to be home with the kids. Please, I need your support. And finally, girl, I wore him down to the ground. He finally said, okay. I think he just said okay to just make me leave him alone. But he grew up with two parents who worked full-time. He didn't understand what my issue was. But I felt that God had put it on my heart, and I felt like it wasn't gonna come off my heart until I moved. And so that's what happened. But, yes, there was nothing but fear. I moved through the fear, and God provided every step of the way. And that's what I want to encourage people out there who might be listening to, not be afraid. Whatever is just nagging you, whatever you can't escape, whatever is sort of, you know, on your heart at every turn, you need to listen to that, because that could be God's voice talking to you. And let God work out the details. You don't have to have every detail. But, you know, meet with your spouse, or with, you know, your set. Everybody's got their own group of advisors in their circle. You know, seek their counsel. Seek wise counsel. And pray on it, and ask God for direction, and then move from there,
And you're not going to fail, you know. And we're never going to fail. As long as we have God, how much are we going to really fail? We can't fail. We can't miss, right?
No, I'm there with you, honey. And I think you've said a couple of things that that resonates with me, seeking good counsel, you know, sound mind. The older I've gotten, now I will say the difference with me, my faith was very much tested, but I was very headstrong and very ambitious. And I look at some of my earlier decision making, and I, you know, I did what you did. I research. I, you know, ask people, what do you think? But when I look back over some of my decisions, some of them were really fear-based decisions. They weren't faith-based. So they were, well, you know, you research this, and if you don't do this, you know, you're going to lose the house. Or if you don't do this, you're not going to get the business. Or if you don't have, you know, if you don't have a partner, if you're not in a relationship, you know, you may miss out. But I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know I was making fear-based decisions versus faith-based decisions. So I want you to think about, have you ever made a fear-based decision, or have you ever thought you were doing something in faith and it turned out that, you know, it turned out to be something else? Because I think some of our listeners may be, you know, in those positions where it's hard to differentiate between the two sometimes.
Yeah, and you know what? That takes spiritual maturity. I don't beat yourself up, because when we're younger, I don't think we realize. I think we get so caught up in the moment, you know, and, you know, sometimes, and that's why it's important to just sort of stop and think it through. But I'm dealing with a situation like that in my life right now, where I made a decision when I was younger out of fear, because, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm still dealing with the effects of this decision that was made in fear. And so now I'm sort of moving to change it, because I, you know, and it sort of freed me up that I can release this, because I don't need it anymore. And, you know, when you're able to look at them and go, I did that out of fear. Why am I holding on to a decision that I made out of fear? I can let this go now and move in faith. I don't need the baggage anymore. You know, we cling to things because we feel like, oh, I have to have this, because if I don't, then something bad might happen, or this could happen. Now I feel like, you know what, God, you didn't ask me. I didn't need all that, but I felt like I had to have it just in case, as my emergency backup, in case
it
don't work out. And God is like, I never told you that. You know, you were trying to create a scenario so that if plan A fell through, you'd have plan B. You don't need a plan B with me. I've got it.
You just need me.
You're stressing yourself out with your plan B. All you're doing is stressing yourself out. You don't need the baggage. So, you know, now that's such an important point that you're making about fear-based decisions. And I think whenever we have a big decision to make, ask yourself, am I doing this out of fear? Or is this God telling me to do this, or am I doing it out of fear?
Because
if you're doing it out of fear, you may, the impact of it may be long-lasting. And you've got to ask yourself, do you want to deal with that 10 years down the road, a decision that you made out of fear? It's just not really worth it. And I think God wants us to enjoy our lives. I don't think God wants us carrying the bag. He wants us to cast our cares. So we've got to really be prayerful about those kind of big choices that we're making, and really make sure that we're making them for the right reason.
I 100% agree. So two things. Let me let our listeners know that if they have a question, if you're okay with answering, I know we're about at time, but if you wouldn't mind, if we have some questions, people can call in at 516-453-9090 and press 1. Again, that's 516-453-9090 and press 1 if you have any questions for me or Ms. Kelly Lynn. Kelly, I wanted to stay on that, because I, you know, I'm always, whatever I learn, I do want to share. And I, you know, in the book, in my life, I've definitely now been able to reach a discernment about what fear-based decision looks like versus faith-based. And, you know, so for example, you know, when I had my first job at the law firm, I worked there for about 4 years. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I did insurance coverage. You knew me then. I was just struggling. Nothing on the inside of me lit up. In fact, let me back it up further than that. In college, I was a mass communications major and really wanted to do exactly what you're doing. I wanted to be a broadcast journalist. I did the same thing you did. I applied for like some contest on the radio and, you know, and I won. I actually got to go on air. But once I graduated or was about to graduate from college, I was like, there is no way I'm going to be able to get a job. I don't, you know, I didn't have the experience. We didn't have studios at Cal, et cetera, et cetera. And so I hedged my bets and I applied for law school. I was like, that's the safe thing to do. That's the responsible thing to do. But looking back, it was the total, that was totally fear-based. I didn't have any kind of faith in myself. I didn't have any type, because I couldn't see it, you know. I just filled my head with doubts. You don't have the experience. You're not going to be able to find a job. It was all, you can't, you can't, you can't. So to our listeners, you know, if you're making a decision, and most of the sentences that come out of your mouth are, I can't do this. Well, I can't. If I do this, I won't be able to do that. That should be kind of a red flag that you're going down the fear, you know, fear-based decision-making. Now, fast forward to when I came to you and told you, I want to make a go at this media thing, you know, and I had no experience. I want to tell the audience that I came to you and I said, Kelly, you know, this was after I the salon went under. I was doing a little legal work. I said, no, I really want to try my hand at the media and go in front of the camera. And girl, you Googled my little name and you said, okay, you got a lot of stuff going on here. You need to get your brand, your packaging together. People that come to the station are very detailed. They have headshots. You just gave me very specific things to do to get my package together. And I'm so grateful for that. But what I did, my decision making was completely different than it was, you know, when I was in college. You told me all those things that I needed, and instead of saying, well, I can't get a website together, I don't even know what a headshot is, you know, I've never been in front of the camera, I looked at those things as the challenge and the checklist. I'm like, okay, she just showed me what I need to do, so go do it. And so that shift was completely different, and it's really yielded such great, you know, rewards. So it was something, that same seed 20 years later was still planted, but this time, you know, I nurtured it. And so I kind of wanted to give that as an example of what fear looks like. And when you follow that, and ultimately, you know, the law degree was cool, that's fine. But what my passion was communications and writing and speaking. And so I just thank you so much for being my role model and being an accessible role model to me and really lighting that little pathway up to tell me what I needed to do.
And, you know, it was a delayed blessing, you know, that you delayed it. But, you know, perhaps you were supposed to go through the whole legal part of it all, even though you didn't enjoy the journey as much, to get to where you are, because, you know, you probably have more to offer women having both, you know, having gone through the struggles as a business owner and having the law background. It's sort of like the perfect package. So, you know, God knew what he was doing.
Amen. And it's true. And now I definitely feel that, you know, his timing is perfect. And it does take a spiritual maturity, and that story was meant to be told in that order, right? So I am very appreciative, but it gives me that lesson too. I can really tell people what does, you know, faith-based versus fear-based decision making kind of look like. What are the clues? So let me say this: we have a caller that has a question, Miss Eileen. I'm so excited. Hey, now, Eileen, you got to bear with me, girl, because this is my first time, so I got all these buttons. So hopefully, Eileen, can you hear us?
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes, how are you?
I'm well. I'm really enjoying the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, honey. Thank you for calling. We are having a good girlfriend's talk here, and we're happy that you're a part of it.
Well, I really appreciate that. I've particularly been enjoying the part of your discussion about faith-based decisions versus fear-based decisions. That is very much resonating with me right now. And in that similar vein, you all briefly hit on God's voice versus your own when it came to the decisions that you are making. And I'm curious, both, you know, Nicole and Kelly, if you could kind of talk a little bit more about how you exactly were you distinguishing that voice? Because I know a lot of times I'm hoping that I'm hearing God's voice, I'm hearing my own, and, you know, I want to be very careful that I'm not usurping, you know, his will or what I'm hoping is his will for my own because I'm thinking about it so much and only hearing my voice. So I just would sort of love to hear your, just briefly, how exactly you were able to distinguish that voice, so to speak, that you talked about briefly before you started the faith-based discussion.
Oh, thank you, Eileen. Kelly, you wanna give your thoughts?
You know, a couple of things with me. I mean, I remember when I was thinking about going back full time to work in television, and I wasn't ready, and I was just doing it because I was afraid. And I was loving being home with my children. I wanted to be there, but, you know, the dollars and the cents and just other people's voices might have been clouding my judgment. But I remember I was going to walk into my manager's office and tell my manager that I was ready to come back full time. And it was like I couldn't – it's like something stopped me. And I remember that, you know, after that, I continued to mull over. I'm going to go in. I'm going to tell them I'm ready. And I remember feeling ill. Every time I thought about going back, I remember feeling sick. So that, you know, just those to me were signs that this is not right for you. But I would say beyond that, you know, that what I do now is I read through the scriptures. I'll go through the Bible and I'll just say, look, is what I'm wanting to do measuring up with God's word? And then I'll pray on it and I have two friends who are really what I call my spiritual advisors, and I'll say, what do you think of this? This is what's on my heart. This is where I feel like God is wanting me to go. What do you think? And that's the wise counsel part of it, seeking the wise counsel. And then sometimes I just wait. You know, if I really feel like I'm not clear, I'll wait patiently, you know, until I feel like, okay, this is the right time. Because I think a lot of times we do things in a hurry when we really haven't heard from God and we don't really know, but we just jump. So I think all of those things, it's probably just it's a number of things that you probably should just go through before you know for sure that this is the right choice. What about you, Nicole?
I love everything you said. I'll just kind of reiterate and emphasize, you know, that impatient people, which I fully fall into that category, have a lot of work to do. And in terms of that stillness, waiting, feeling like you have to rush decisions that really don't need, that you don't need to make a decision, but there's just something in you that impatience may, you know, trigger decisions that are made in haste or made, you know, made out of fear. I can't say that I actively meditate as much as I'd like, but I am aware of my physical responses to decision making. And what do I mean by that? So, you know, I may have an offer on the table, and it doesn't mean that I have to, you know, act at that time. Like, just take an email. You know, we get email responses at work or whatever, and maybe something comes across your desk or across your computer, and it's a little biting, right? You have a coworker or a colleague. They say something. You know, my natural impulse is to react, right? I'm going to tell her this, that, and the other. And now I really relish in those paused moments. That where I can respond, where I can reflect, where all of that energy, maybe negative, maybe anxiety energy, that passes. And then I have some clarity. Okay, what's really on the table? Thinking about the different, you know, I can respond this way, this, and this is the consequence to it. But anything, but I feel like I've grown just as a communicator and as a person to not react to decisions and taking time, and it may be talking to other people, but the older I've gotten, it's usually just being quiet. And whatever answer arises within that quiet place is usually a better answer. It's not an emotion. It's not an emotional reactionary answer. It's very much a spirit-centered decision. And I never gave myself the benefit of that when I was younger. But now, and it's not like, hey, it's not like I don't have things that still come up. I still have lots of emotion. I'm still pretty impatient as a natural, you know, that's just a natural part of my personality. But I have the tool now of being still and calm and letting whatever emotion passes, let that pass. And then whatever is left, whatever comes up naturally, it's a response. And so, you know, that's kind of, I don't know if that gets you anywhere, Eileen, but that's kind of what came up for me.
Yeah. No, it absolutely does. I appreciate both responses, really, because, again, for me, it's interesting to see how that comes up for other people, and also helps me maybe to look at other or perhaps focus a little bit more with more intent on things that maybe I hadn't before. Kelly, you talked about certain physical clues and signs, you know, about feeling sick every time you would, you know, go up there. And I think many times you might even miss that kind of clue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not making the connection that it has a direct correlation to that decision you're making or not making, you know, in that respect. And, Nicole, you speaking about the quiet and the stillness, I'm struggling through meditation right now, so it's ironic you bring that up, but I'm looking forward to reaping those benefits and sort of seeing what comes up for me, and that's really the reason why I'm trying to hang in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so to hear that, you know, that you've been able to, you know, gain benefit out of it, and how it's been able to help change things in your life is very empowering.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that feeling of peace. You know, if you're not feeling a sense of peace, then it probably is not the right choice. I remember recently there was a story that I really wanted to do. It was very controversial. But the human side of me really wanted to do the story. But I remember thinking, God, I was all excited about it. I told the little girl's mother, we're going to do this. And then I remember when I got in my car, I said, wait a minute. God, I never even asked you if you wanted me to do this story. You need me to do this story? And I had to back up because I was all over it. And it was like, wait a minute. I don't know if this is how you want me to approach my work. And I said to myself, I didn't know what to do. Because, again, I really wanted to do it, but I wasn't sure. And I just put it on pause. And I thought, okay, you know, let me know if this is your story. If this is something you want me to cover, you let me know how you feel about this. And you know what? The woman never, you know, she never followed up. And we were so engaged with one another in person. She never followed up. I never followed up. And I just put it on the back burner. I said, okay, well, I guess you don't need me to do it. And I moved on. But sometimes it's back to the whole taking a step back. And we get so caught up and we move so fast. And then it's like, wait a minute. I don't even need to be doing this.
Right.
Hold on.
No, it's so true.
So I was happy that I sort of grabbed myself, you know, and took the time to ask the question, is this even something you need me to do? You know, because we're all purpose. We're all here for a purpose. And the purpose is hopefully to live out God's plans for our lives. And so if we're not constantly asking him, do you need me here? Do you need me here? Do you need me to
stay? Right. Doing that check-in.
We're going down the wrong path. And you know, the older we get, the more important it is that we are on the right path, that we're doing things that we're purposed to do, that we're not just out here wasting our time.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And Eileen, I want to thank you. We have another caller, but I want to thank you so much for sharing your feedback and your question with us today. I wanted to also leave her with this too. You know, sometimes I'm learning about, you know, ego-based decisions. Maybe I'm going a little deeper than I have, but I'll just keep it at, you know, ego-based versus your spirit-based. Your ego serves a purpose, right? And my God, as a business owner, you know, as a media personality or a newbie, a baby media personality, there are a lot of things that kind of, you know, stroke your ego, make you feel good. And that could be very tempting. It can be very distracting, you know, in terms of, What am I supposed to be doing? What is the goal? What's my intention for doing this assignment, et cetera, right? But like you said, consulting with God, tapping into your spirit, you know, making sure that they're in alignment. And there could always be, you know, ancillary benefits, you know, people appreciate your work, et cetera. But I thought about when you said, you know, I want to do this story. You know, I'm really passionate about this story. Sometimes those decisions, it's like a shade of gray, right? You're like, is this really my ego? Is this something, you know, my ambition? Da 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 da. Or is this really serving a higher purpose? What's my intention? Why do I want to do this? Those types of questions, and what you said is absolutely true. Checking in with God and saying, hey, you know, I need you to guide me. I don't trust my judgment, and I have had this conversation about 37 times this weekend. I don't trust my judgment on this. So I need you to give me some assistance. I need some signs. I need, you know, I need to be still. If there is supposed to be traction here, help me out. Make this clear. Make it plain to me, because my intentions may be blurred here. Am I doing this for my own benefit, or am I doing this, you know, because you want me to? But I think what you said is so true. Just having him in the conversation, that totally works for me. Yes. I think we have a comment from Michelle. Michelle, are you on? Let me see if I can do this.
I'm here. I think I'm unmuted now. Absolutely. I just had to call in first, congratulate you on your first show. And it's definitely a subject matter that I can relate to. You know, I'm just going back into the workforce with four kids, and I'm just going back into the workforce full-time after 17 years. And I think for me, even when I talk to other sisters, you know, my thing is, yeah, you can have it all, but sometimes you can't have it all at the same time. And so I think in going forth and as you're talking about faith-based decisions, just keeping in mind in all of your ways, acknowledge him and he'll direct your path. So
amen.
I just, again, first and foremost, wanted to congratulate my sister soror business friend, Cole, and just thank you for the needed subject matter, because it can be very weighty. And Kelly, just as you said, you love what you do, and it was the same for me. I love my career and, of course, love my kids more. You know, we just find a way to make it all work. So, again, thank you so much for this encouraging and uplifting show, and much success to both of you.
Thank you so
much. What a wonderful blessing. 17 years with her children
yes.
the whole time. Beautiful.
Yes.
That's
yes.
awesome. And here she is back.
And when you... Now, and I know when I hear her voice, so she is one of my, not only my sister friends, but my sister in business. We support each other in many different ways. She too has a blog radio show. She's amazing. She's a business consultant, you know, just a beautiful spirit. And so I really appreciate her coming on and sharing her thoughts. And we often have conversations about, you know, can you have it all? Is that possible? What do you think? I think our listeners would know your path now, but do you feel that you have, what is having it all? And do you have any thoughts on it?
I don't believe in having it all. And I think what you said, I think there are seasons in life. And I think that that if you look at your life that way, at least for me, it helps me balance it all. That, okay, that, you know, I had my season of working full-time. I had my season of working part-time. I had my, you know, now I've sort of my season of sort of juggling both. And I think it's to just trust God and not feel the need and the pressure to have it all at once. Have a much more fulfilling life. So when I hear stories like hers, that is so beautiful and so encouraging to know that, you know, she had that long, wonderful season, and now she's working and she's getting back to that side of herself. And so, you know, we really can have it all, but I do think it's very difficult to have it all at once. I think you're going to miss out on something one way or another.
Do you, let's talk about your relationship for a minute. I'll tell you, earlier this year, I had the opportunity to go speak at Harvard Business School's Women in Business Conference, and they had some really great panel. I was on the panel. They had great keynote speakers, and these women were CEOs of very large companies, and I got a theme going from all of their talks, and it was really having the strength. They said they attributed the key to their success to their husbands, and the fact that their husbands took on unconventional roles in their lives that were very support, you know, that they were clearly, you know, they had $100 million companies, and they had children, and they had marriages, and they were the first to acknowledge that those husbands took on very different roles than the quote-unquote traditional breadwinner-type roles that we may be accustomed to. Are you able to talk a little bit about your relationship and how the ebbs and flows of your career and family impacted your relationship?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, my husband has always been extremely supportive, you know, of whatever it is that I was doing. And even though he wasn't wild about me quitting my job, I told you, he eventually came around. But I think, you know, with him, he's always had more of a flexible schedule. So he has, he says it all the time. He'll say, you know, we work our schedule around whatever you're doing. So, you know, if I work early morning hours, he says we're getting up early. If I work late hours, he says we're going to bed late. And he said our house runs on your schedule. Now, I did not design it that way.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he says. But I have to say that I could not do any of this without a partner who covers the gaps when I'm not here and who sort of, you know, supported me in my part time, in my no time, in my full time, and just, you know, went with it. We did the ups and the downs together. And I think now that I'm working full time and so appreciative of being back in the workforce and really enjoying it, I appreciate his role so much more now because he's the one taking the kids to the practices. He's the one taking them to the games. He's the one shuttling them around. And, you know, he is just, he's now transitioning himself from a career in business and finance to now he's moving into education because it works well for the family. So, you know, we've constantly been sort of shifting, you know, based on what was happening with our careers. So I do think it helps tremendously. It can be done without a partner, but it's such an asset to have a supportive spouse.
So this is awesome, and I agree. And you look, and girl, between you, me, and the wall post, you know that I've done it right and I've done it wrong. So I can tell our listeners, I can testify on that. But I will tell you this. I've been around a time or two on relationships, and you know, having a very supportive partner is immeasurable. I mean, it's priceless. It's priceless how you can be a best version of yourself. You talked about counsel, and one of those people in your counsel ideally should be your partner. What I want to tell the sisters out there that may be looking for a partner, this is what I want to talk about. What are the characteristics in a man that make him a good partner? What are the things about Mike? And again, we're talking about at least 15, 20 years in, right? 20 years in. What are the specific characteristics? Because I think, you know, at the beginning of the relationship, people look at, you know, crap stuff. Oh, he looks good. Oh, he got this job, you know, blah, 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 blah. Or he's a Virgo. I mean, really. But what I want you to say, that is crap. And that's what I did. And I'm saying, I'll go first. I messed up. I looked at totally crap level stuff. Now if a man is built together in terms of a pie chart, this is what I want you to do. I want you to take that pie chart and slice it up, and I want you to give me the percentages. What qualities does that supportive person look like for you?
You know, he took care of me when I was dating him. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You can see the caregiving that a person provides to you when you're just going out. You know, wherever I went, and it's not a materialistic kind of thing. I don't mean that way. I mean nurturing. There's a difference between buying me and nurturing me.
You better say it again, sis.
There's a difference between somebody buying things for you and then nurturing you. What I'm saying is that he was the anchor and the rock, even in the dating relationship. Whatever I was doing, he was on board. Wherever I was going, he wanted to go. You know, it was like, it was just unified from the very beginning. It was a level of commitment that just carried through. So I think when I saw that part of it, and then the second thing I think women need to really look at is the parents of the person they're dating, because what does their relationship look like? Because your husband, your future husband, is he has grown up in a household where he's watching the interaction between these two people, and he's going to copy that more than likely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if my husband's parents had a very solid marriage, were very solid, steady people, and I liked their marriage. So I figured, okay, he comes from this. He probably is going to know what to do, and he's probably going to be able to get this right. So that, I think that helps me greatly too.
Yes. No, I think those are excellent characteristics. Now, I want to say this too, because, you know, I have had the opposite. If I'm candid, that I came from parents who had and still have a really solid foundation. The challenge was I met and I was the nurturing person, right? So I don't know what it was, but people that needed nurturing, that maybe came from dysfunction or came from, you know, something where they were missing something in their childhood, gravitated toward me. And I do think in the African American community, you know, not to generalize, but we do have a lot of broken relationships and men that are a product of those. What would you say to women that maybe, you know, they are very much in love with someone, but, you know, that person did not have that model, you know, that model to follow? Do you think that they should give up, or what are some tools that you think they should have in their arsenal for dealing with someone that may not have had an example of, you know, an ideal relationship?
You know, I am that person. We have to say, my husband took a risk in marrying me because I came from a twice divorced household. I didn't see people working it out. I saw people leaving the relationship. It just wasn't good, and I think it can work out. But for me, the glue for me was God. So when I finding God, sort of that gave me my roadmap. So then I knew, oh, okay, this is how God wants marriage to go. This is His plan for my life, and this is how He wants us to live. And so I think had I not found that roadmap, I probably would have been divorced by now because I just didn't know how to do it. So I think, and I don't know any other way, Nicole. I know that there are plenty of people out here who have long marriages who don't have God in their relationship, but that's the only way I know. I could not make it in my marriage, in anything I'm doing without God. He has really secured it all for me and helped me through it all. It's really, I just give all of the glory and the honor to Him, because that is my secret. That's what works for me.
Yeah.
I would be totally lost. If I had not found God, I would be totally lost. And I probably wouldn't have been as successful on so many things in my life.
I appreciate that, honey, so much, because it's true. And the way that you talk about God, and again, I can't quote you scripture and verse, but I know through my lessons, through my hardcore experiences, is what you said is absolutely true. And I saw how my life did shift when I put God first versus feeling, I got this all figured out. All I need to do is go to college. All I need to do is get this and get this degree. I mean, I was so analytical and so singular in my decision making that that was a significant difference. So I think that's why I did have certain, if not failure, objectively, big losses in my life, was because I was so headstrong on doing things myself, not needing anyone. And I didn't even put God in that category. I just literally did not think about God. I literally, you know, I think about when I was in law school and making some of these decisions, they were so practical and so analyzed, but there was no depth. There was no spiritual base to them. And and your point is so well taken that clearly is what was missing. And I don't know if other people have that experience, but I think that is definitely the beginning and the end for a lot of people, is putting God first. Love God, love yourself, and love others in that order. Is now my blueprint for life, and I've seen a big difference.
Amen. That's wonderful. That. Absolutely.
Well, honey, this was it was better than I could have ever dreamed, but it's exactly what I hoped for. I really value you tremendously as a sister, as a mentor, and as a friend, and I just thank you for helping me get my nerves out and helping me feel a little calm and relaxed and just talking to me. I appreciate you so much. Is there anything you want to share with our audience before we head on out of this first successful CEOs and Soul Talk?
No, I just want to thank you and just again tell you that I'm so proud of you and that I know that there are going to be so many open doors ahead of you. I'm just looking forward to seeing how God moves in your life, continues to, and it's going to be an exciting journey. So thank you for the chance to be your first guest.
Woo-hoo! Well, I hope that you come back. We're going to do this. We're going to do it very regularly, every couple of every other week at 7:00. So hopefully next time you'll be listening to us on the way home. Why don't you tell our audience how they can get in touch with you? Look, I'm now turning on my communications director hat for you. So plug yourself, girl. Plug yourself.
Absolutely. So I encourage people to, if you've got a story idea, because I'm an education reporter, so I'm always looking for positive story ideas, you can send them to Kaylynn, that's Kaylynn, at WJLA.com. If you know of a person or a program that's really making a difference in the lives of students, let me know, and hopefully I can get up there and do a story.
That sounds awesome. Well, thank you, sweetheart, very much. Please kiss all my babies for me. Wait, how old are the kids now? I hate that I do not know instinctively. I know we got one in high school. Am I right?
We have a 13. We have two in middle. So we have a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old. I know. I have two in middle. So everybody pray for me, okay?
Oh, my gracious, girl. Oh, do they have phones, Kelly? Like, my 9-year-old Logan is, like, hitting me up for a phone. I was like, not until high school, but he is pressing. What's the verdict on that? Phone, cell phone, yes or no?
I say mine is high school, too. I'm so glad that you were talking the same thing. I say 9th grade, you get a phone. Right now my children have iPods, and that's plenty. They're on them way too much. So,
yes.
No, you don't need it. They don't call each other anyway. They only text. So why do you need a phone? I don't really understand why you need a phone if you don't call.
I'm going to be everywhere you're either going to be. Yeah, you're going to be everywhere I'm going to be. And if you're not, there's a problem. I mean, and I'm the only one you're calling. That's it. That's all I want to hear. So, I did it for Jordan, and so that's the blessing and the curse of having an older brother. He rolls his eyes every time I say, work for Jordan, it's going to work for you too. So he's like, oh, brother, I'm the worst mom ever.
No, Jordan, just fine. That's the right choice.
And I wanted to tell you, too, that the clothes Austin gave him, he is finally able to wear, and he looks like Rico Suave. So cool. Just, I mean, flat, girl. He took his school pictures on Friday, girl. He got up at the crack of dawn, put on his white shirt and his blazer to go and take his school pictures, girl. So I had to tell Auntie Kelly. He looks so cute.
That is so awesome. You've got to send me the picture. Is it on your? Is it on Facebook? We're going to see this.
It's not on yet. You're right. No, it's not on. He just took it. So when I get it, you will be the first one. You and my 500,000, or no, my 5,000. The closest friends on Facebook, you know, I'll post it. Proud mommy.
Oh my goodness, you are a social media wonder. Let me tell you, I'm so not.
But I'll say because I don't post things that I don't feel, you know. So a lot of the social media mavens say you've got to post 10 times a day and this and that. I can't keep up with all that. All I do know is, when I feel it, I write about it. You know, if I have a little funny joke that I think is hilarious, I'm posting it. If my kid did something hilarious, I'm posting it, you know. So I don't know if it works, but, it, you know, I have to keep it real. I have to be authentic. So hopefully that goes well.
Yes.
All right.
We have been thoroughly enjoying you on social media, and we will continue to.
Oh, thank you, honey. All right. Well, thank you so much, and we will talk again very, very soon.
Yes. Looking forward to it.
All right. All right, honey. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Hey, guys. We did it. Woohoo! You guys, let me tell you. Okay, so we're wrapping up now. We got about 5 more minutes. So I know I sound very calm, cool, and collected. I was freaking out all day, all right? So I had a little, you know, I had to go to the doctor, little stuff, nothing so big, right? But I went to the doctor, and I just thought I would be getting a routine eyeglass fitting and contacts fitting. So they asked me, did I want to do a dilation or whatever test. So I was like, okay, this is about 4:30. So I did all my other stuff. I did that. I've never done it before, all right? So I'm walking out, and I literally cannot read anything. So this dilation test, it doesn't affect your far vision, but it affects your nearsightedness. So I'm like, at 6 o'clock, trying to get ready for you all and do this show, and I can't read my daggone computer. I can't read my phone, nothing. I mean, it's crazy. And I was like, what in the world? How am I going to do my first show? And I literally can't see. So I am running up into CVS trying to buy some bifocals. I know you're like, what the heck is this story about? But my point is that I was petrified. Nothing was going right before I went on, and I got my little bifocals. I've been sitting here looking like Mr. Magoo talking to you guys. but I knew, first of all, I knew that my beautiful team that I want to give a shout out to, Miss Rona Wright, my producer, and Miss Layla, my intern and engineer extraordinaire. I knew I was in perfectly capable hands for this first time out, so that was cool. And then I had my sister come on, and I know that she would carry it on through. But let me tell you, I really hope that our audience grows and grows and grows. I think we need to have more serious, more in-depth conversations. It's not only for our, you know, just for us to talk, but it is really to let people know you're not alone. You're not alone in the struggles that we're all going through trying to figure this whole thing out, right? And, you know, what I have found from my book and writing and so forth is that the more you share, the more you grow and you're being of service to other people. I really believe that I'm doing a spiritual assignment by connecting with like-minded people and trying to go first and have some courage and talk about my ups and downs. And I hope that by sharing your ups and downs, we can come together, get some strategies together, build a beautiful community that we we'll all learn together and really find our purpose for being here. It's not just to collect money. It's not just to collect kids and relationships. it really is to be connected to a higher source. I fundamentally believe that. And so I just want to give you thanks. Thank you. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your support. All my good girlfriends that have called in. Next time we'll be on in 2 weeks. I'll have some more amazing guests. We'll talk about more amazing topics. And I just want you to be the best version of yourself. I really appreciate your time. Love you guys so much. You can follow me. Please follow me on Nick Kober Esquire. Pick up your latest episode edition of Essence Magazine. Woohoo! CEO of my soul. If you haven't got it, get it. Woo! We're off.
Welcome to CEOs and Soul Talk with Nick Kober Esquire. CEO and